Very few figures in history have been as relentlessly smeared as Sheev Palpatine, who served as Emperor of the First Galactic Empire for 23 years, from 19 BBY to 4 ABY, and before that as Supreme Chancellor to the Galactic Republic for 13 years, from 32 BBY to 19 BBY. This is because history is often written by the winners, and therefore what we are told is subject to propaganda and spin. In this video, I am going to explain why Palpatine was justified in establishing the Empire, and why he was noble in his aims. When the Honorable Lord Vader says, from my point of view, the Jedi are evil, he was not lost, but rather seeing the situation quite clearly, as I will elucidate in due course. Now, before starting, I should point out that my argument is not that the Empire made no mistakes or that their leadership were military or strategic or tactical geniuses. The argument is that their cause was noble and righteous. I say this because many rebel apologists have tried to make the argument that Palpatine was in the wrong because he ultimately lost, which is a bit like saying that the Allied forces would have been in the wrong had they lost World War II. Anyway, my argument will be structured around five core parts. First, I will look at Palpatine's use of the Separatists to model an ideal economy and to critique democracy during the crisis. Second, I will look at how Palpatine gave meaning, direction, and purpose to the lives of trillions of people across the galaxy. Third, I will expose the arid and empty Galactic Republic, a world of atomized individuals with no moral compass. Fourth, I will demonstrate the moral bankruptcy of the rebellion and their failure to build a society worth defending. And finally, I will look at the controversy surrounding Grand Moff Tarkin's strike on Alderaan, a move that has gained much prominence in pro-rebel propaganda efforts, but which, when viewed from the righteous perspective of the Empire, was not only fully justified, but also much smaller in scope and scale than you have been led to believe. So let us begin by looking at how Palpatine used the Separatist crisis to demonstrate economic and political lessons in action. The fact he was demonstrating these things through action rather than through dry scholarly theory is characteristic of his heroic spirit. Palpatine was a man of action, not someone who hid behind doctrine. He showed the way by doing. One of the things that many people do not appreciate about the economy under the corrupt leadership of the Galactic Republic is that they had debased the currency to be little more than fiat credit money, known as Galactic Credit, underwritten by the Intergalactic Banking Clan, or IBC for short. This money depreciated by a system known as fractional reserve banking, which allowed expansionary credit, effectively banks loaning out monies which could not cover their own reserves, and then relying on the IBC to issue more credits, which were essentially bailouts. Such was this system abused by the various governing bodies in the Galactic Republic that by 22 BBY, Galactic credits had depreciated to the point where an overwhelming majority of planets outside the core and inner rim would not accept them. For example, on Tatooine, Watto would not accept credits from Qui-Gon Jinn. He says, "Republic credits? Republic credits are no good out here. I need something more real." One of the unfortunate byproducts of this policy of cheap inflationary credit was that it resulted in an artificially low interest rate and induced what economists call high time preference behaviors among the citizens of the Galactic Republic, which is to say, impulsive, hedonistic, wanted now type behavior, as opposed to delaying consumption and carefully saving. Palpatine hatched a plan to do something about this by relying on the Intergalactic Banking Clan chairman, San Hill, who he had secretly installed on behalf of his old master, Darth Plagueis, back when he was still alive. Using the Separatist Crisis, he was able to reverse this trend in two ways. First, by greatly increasing the rate of interest for the Republic, thereby inducing lower time preference behaviours in both the citizens and the governments there, because loans were now much more expensive. And second, by using a model of hard money funding for Count Dooku's Separatist Alliance. In other words, the IBC funded the Separatist effort entirely from a real private savings and investments and not from debt. San Hill ran tight budgetary surpluses and provided a model for how the future empire would be funded. And this real capital, zero debt model of purchases was maintained right through the supply chain. So the Trade Federation used IBC funds and their own reserves to make purchases from the Techno Union, who in turn used the Commerce Guild to source their raw materials, and the Geonisans under Poggle the Lesser for land and cheap labour. In other words, the Separatist Alliance live within and not beyond their means. Palpatine also used the Corporate Alliance to lobby the Senate and to buy off corrupt politicians. Thus, he exposed a core weakness of democracy that had been highlighted since the days of Thomas Hobbes. 10,000 senators is equal to 10,000 opportunities to lobby and bribe. Compare that with Palpatine's tight inner circle, who are not only small in number, but also incorruptible. The Emperor himself could never be bribed, of course. The Galactic Empire was much more fiscally and monetarily responsible than the Republic, and much less corrupt. Let's move on to the second part of my presentation now, which is to look at the inner life of the citizens of the galaxy, who Palpatine gave meaning, purpose, and direction. So many people in the galaxy were lost and atomized individuals with no sense of community or fellow feeling in their lives. One is reminded of the recent Joker movie, only things were much more extreme under the Republic because the institutions were so much more remote. Now, look at what happened under Palpatine. Study this image. The chap circled on the left there dreamed of serving in the Imperial forces from a young age. Now he is fully self-actualized. Palpatine gave him a sense of what Aristotle would call eudaimonia. And the same is true of so many of those who you see in this picture. Note the deference with which Darth Vader kneels in the presence of the Emperor, and likewise note the deference of the Imperial Guards and the lower ranking officers which they pay towards Lord Vader himself. This is not just fear, it is love. And this is, of course, genuine hierarchy. But not some evil tyrannical hierarchy, but a hierarchy in which everyone had a place and in which everyone could feel happy and even special in fulfilling their role. And then, of course, we think of the devastation wrought upon the Empire by the evil rebellion. Let me draw your attention to the man on the bottom right who was set to retire from service, but alas, this is an assignment from which he would never return. Children will grow up with no father now because of the selfish actions of the rebellion. Let's move on to part three now. This concerns the arid and empty world of the Galactic Republic, which, as I've said, was full of atomized individuals with no moral compass. As Thomas Carlyle once said, the man without a purpose is like a ship without a rudder, a weight, a nothing, a no man. And this is what we see embodied in the Jedi Council itself in the late Republic, which I'll return to in a moment. But what do we see in the Republic? We see a political system that rewards corruption and ineptitude. For example, Jar Jar Binks, someone of zero merit whatsoever, is made a senator. Jedi Knights are used by the powerful elite as personal bodyguards in wasteful displays of resource allocation. We see that the Republic is slow and inefficient due to red tape and bureaucracy. In some ways, it reminds one of the European Union, a lumbering, burdensome, parasitic, macro-planetary, interstellar organization that talks about everything and solves nothing. But unlike the EU, it doesn't even facilitate free movement of people and capital all that well. We see it hamper the operations of the Trade Federation with business-killing, punitive taxation and regulatory overreach. Meanwhile, they had seemingly no moral qualms about using clones in their army. All in all, the Galactic Republic was directionless and rudderless. In Thomas Carlyle's phrase, a ship steered by sham captains. The moral and spiritual decline of the Republic can be seen by tracing who sat on the Jedi Council during its final years, as I have done here. One can see a notable drop-off by the time we get to the final council of 19 BBY. We witness a clear degeneration in the quality of Jedi, which shows how they lost their way spiritually. An earlier generation of Jedi, such as Master Sifo Dyas, Count Dooku, and Qui-Gon Jinn, were still in touch with the transcendent spirit of the Force, but these heroic Jedi gave way to brittle and bureaucratic box tickers, epitomized by pencil pushers such as Jocasta Nu, who was only too happy to work in the library, and Yariel Poof, a Jedi known more for his practical jokes than dedication to spiritual enlightenment. So disillusioned was Count Dooku with all this that he sought a better way, a more righteous way, by joining forces with Palpatine. Cai Adimundi was also emblematic of what had gone wrong. Arguably, he was the third Jedi in seniority after Grandmaster Yoda and the Master of the Council, Mace Windu, but his vision was so dimmed that he remained skeptical of the return of the Sith long into the Separatist crisis. By 19 BBY, with the likes of Stas Ali and Colman Cadge sitting on the council, it is safe to say the Jedi were not sending their best. Which brings us to part 4 and the moral bankruptcy of the Rebel Alliance, including their failure to build a society worth defending. We see them consistently promote personnel based on affirmative action policies and not on personal merit. When the Empire is finally defeated and we see them fail to establish law and order, creating a power vacuum throughout the galaxy. And in what little they do achieve, we see them attempt to reassert the arid health and safety culture of the Republic, risk-averse, cowardly, feminine, and all this takes the place of Palpatine's more masculine, heroic doctrine of action that we see in the Empire. And there is a personal cost to all of this too. After the defeat of the Empire, Han immediately returns to his old life as a smuggler, and he's an absent father to the young Ben Solo. Leia, meanwhile, fails to establish order and dramatically reduces the efficacy of the rebellion by promoting purple-haired feminists into key decision-making roles. Finally, their son, abandoned, lost, neglected by his idealistic but irresponsible parents, basically a symbol of the broken families created by these values. Their son seeks true morality and righteousness, and thus seeks to restore the hierarchical and heroic order that Palpatine had built. Guided, of course, by Palpatine himself, whose dedication to the Empire was so great that he even attempted to cheat death itself to give his life for it all over again. Now, I'm sure most of you watching this will have been following along and agreeing with much of what I've been saying so far, but still the question may be nagging in the back of your mind of Alderaan. Didn't you see Grand Moff Tarkin blow up the entire planet, you might be thinking? Surely that is evil, no? Well, first you need to understand why Alderaan was such an existential threat to the Empire. Here we see Brea Organa, who was always secretly resentful of her adopted daughter Leia and didn't really have the time to look after her anyway. She had to rule while her simp husband, Bail Organa, was sent to the Senate. And this reflects in many ways the inverted social order and misplaced ideals of Alderaan. Alderaan had been promoting degeneracy and subversive propaganda for decades, which included undermining the family structure, undermining notions of hierarchy, undermining notions of in-group preference, and undermining traditional notions of sexual decency. And this is embodied in Leia herself, who is wanton, lewd, and shrewish. In later years, she enacts affirmative action policies, as we've seen. In the ancient teachings of the Sith, all of these actions from the subversive denizens of Alderaan were a revolt against nature itself, which were accelerating the time of the Kali Yuga, a hellish period in which the worst and the lowest rule over the strongest, most noble, and most able. They represented a real and mortal danger to the lives of over 100 quadrillion people in the galaxy who had come to know and love Imperial life. And so Tarkin did the most merciful thing he could do in the circumstances to eliminate this great threat to civilization itself. As you all know, the planet and its 2 billion inhabitants are destroyed. But please put this in perspective. It is the life of 2 billion people to save the lives of 100 quadrillion people. As a percentage of that total, it is actually tiny. 0.00001%. As a comparison, the British bombing of Dresden was 0.51% of the population of Germany, or 510,000 times more destructive than the strike on Alderaan, and the US atomic strike on Hiroshima was 0.49% of Japan's population, or over 490,000 times more destructive than the strike on Alderaan in relative terms. If we scale this to the UK population, 0.00001% works out as 0.65 people. That's less than one person. Now imagine there was a terrorist who is hell-bent on destroying the country and everything you love. Would breaking his leg be worth it to save 65 million people? Viewed on these terms, the strike on Alderaan is no worse than breaking the leg of a terrorist. So the attack is of a much smaller scope and scale than you have been led to think about when you consider the sheer size of the territories that Palpatine had to think about. 100 quadrillion people celebrated when they heard the news, but I suppose you've never been told about that. You've only ever been shown the footage of a few Gungans dancing when the Empire fell. Most people in the galaxy, the silent majority, were devastated when they learned of Palpatine's death. Even in these images of the so-called celebrations at his death, note the rebel ships looming to shoot at anyone who did not look happy. So anyway, there it is. Let me know what you make of these arguments. I'm sure many will be convinced, but after a lifetime of rebel brainwashing and propaganda, I'm sure many also will be experiencing too much cognitive dissonance fully to accept that Palpatine was in the right all along. Now get out.